It's 26 minutes past 8 o'clock, and as I mentioned earlier, today being a Wednesday, Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., is in the house to talk about all sorts of things, and generally speaking, we kind of wander around a little, but that's fine. That's what adult conversation is all about. So if you're keen, join us. If not, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's such a lovely early summer's day after all the rain.
Yeah, it's
stunning.
You know, these are the days where one wonders why you worry about the nonsense in the world. It's, you know, you wake up and you look out and you see the sea is beautiful, the sky is clear.
Who was a philosopher that said my life was plagued by troubles, almost all of which never happened?
Well, isn't that true? And we get in an absolute twist about all sorts of things, matters, some of which we can affect the outcome of, and there we should be involved. But others that we cannot possibly get excited about or involved in terms of making any contribution.
Maybe I suppose the political economy in any country is a bit like the weather. You know, it's sort of sometimes it rains and sometimes it shines, and it sort of goes through all its machinations and all its changes and all its cycles. And you know, we're probably in a we are definitely in some kind of cycle, where what has come for the last 30 years is about to pass by and something else is going to take its place, and we can only be optimistic, and hopefully what takes place is for the good of all of us.
We hope. And looking at property, because this is an area in which you are a specialist in terms of legal matters, it would appear that there is a lot of confidence in the north coast of KZN, particularly the Ballito Strip, although it does tend to reflect closer towards the Sabaya precinct as well. There's a lot happening, lots and lots of development, lots of people buying, lots of institutional buying, it would appear. And as these things go, it's all well and good, but I also see a lot of folk getting stuck in to freestanding homes, in particular, in Ballito and in places like Tindley Manor, which are coming on board now. And no doubt, of course, Ballito extending right the way through to Christmas Bay, Sheffield. Lots and lots of folk buying up properties and doing them up quite extensively. I was chatting to one of our security, private security companies on the show the other day, and he was explaining how the permanent resident number has increase. No one really knows what the quantum is, how many people actually live here, but it's certainly a massive increase from back in sort of 20 years ago, which is all indicative of confidence in the area, and clearly there's lots of commercial transactions taking place. But with that comes apparently quite a few disputes, shall we say, about people that have bought property or about to, or they think they have, and then they discover that, in fact, the fence or the boundary isn't quite where they thought it was. And, I mean, this is one issue that I believe is...
Well, it's something I come across all the time, and that is especially... in some sense, it's probably most prevalent in estates, where they tend to do an audit of the property when it's about to be transferred to make sure that the property being that's sort of their in to come around and have a look and make sure that everything's regular. And by and large, you know, Ballito developed very quickly at one stage, and it developed at a faster pace than what, you know, building control and those sort of people were operating. And so,
is that how big buildings went up before there was a sort of moratorium on height?
Correct, that sort of thing. And you know, it was a bit of the Wild West, and it's a bit of a diamond rush when suddenly an area becomes very popular and you're building and as quickly as you can, and you're selling them as quickly as you build them. So, you know, speed is of the essence, and sometimes working to the rule of law, and that is goes out the window. So a lot of the early building that was done in Ballito, well, not even the early building, up till about a decade ago, a lot of the servitudes or a lot of the boundaries weren't properly sort of observed. And it's very easy now for the municipality to come along, or for an HIA to come along and say, well, this wall doesn't quite run where it should run, and you've now sort of encroached with the wall into the neighbor's property, or he's encroached into yours. So we're doing quite a lot of servitudes, a lot more than I want to be doing, but we're doing quite a lot of servitudes to placate both municipality and the HOAs. So you'd have you know, a party wall or some servitude where you say, well, I know that your retaining wall comes off into my garden, and I'm just going to give you a servitude of, you know, 2 square meters to rectify it so that on plan everything's fine. And so we register servitudes against the title deeds of both properties. The property into which the encroachment occurs, that owner consents to it being there, and the property that benefits from it, that they get the benefit of the servitude.
Now, if there is a dispute, for example, you buy a property, there's a fence around it, or boundary, and that gives you an idea of the size of the place, and, and then you discover that, in fact, it is a little smaller than that, because the particular, I'm talking about freestanding now, in my experience, and it was a personal experience.
Well, people had
fenced off a good portion of the pavement.
People have been opportunistic, I suppose, in some sense. You know, it happens in the estates as well, where, you know, the earth extends to a certain point, and they sort of, the fence is a little bit down the hill from that, and they sort of have fenced in a bit of the common property of the homeowners association. And those things all need to be rectified at some stage, and they're becoming an issue, and obviously...
But who pays? This is the thing, because this can be expensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, your average servitude's probably, I don't know, going to cost you around maybe 20 to 30,000 rand to register. So there is an expense there. Look, I know that nobody does this, but if you're buying a property, you should probably call for the title deed. That'll tell you exactly how many squares. Because that title deed is related to a survey diagram where all the beacons are put in, and that'll tell you exactly how large.
But now, don't you, in the offer to purchase, or generally when a property comes up to sale, isn't it described, the description of the property?
It's not obligatory
really?
to put the extent of the property in a sale agreement.
Really?
So all you have to do is identify the property sufficiently for both parties to know which property is being sold.
Ah.
And so, mostly, you know, we're very lucky in this day and age because the information is so accessible, and most estate agents have access to, you know, WinDeed or one of the programs that records what's in the deeds office and makes it available online. So you get a little report, and it'll tell you the extent of the property as it's registered in the deed, and that's basically the only real source of that information.
But then how easy is that to interpret on the ground? Because you get maybe square meterage, but until you've seen a surveyor's peg.
Some agreements, we quite often see agreements where there's a clause. You can put anything in an agreement, and there's quite a few agreements that just as a standard put an obligation on the seller to point out the beacons or to get a professional in to come and identify where they are and peg them.
So if you've
got reason to believe that all is not as it appears with this property that you're buying, you can always make that a condition that your seller is going to point out the beacons. It's not really, you know, the encroachments are normally small. It's not like you're going to buy something of 2,000 squares and find out it's only 1,000 squares, but it can happen, I suppose.
But where it becomes an issue is when it comes to greenery, trees and bushes that are on the boundary and give you a modicum of privacy, for example, or just, you know, aesthetic joy. But the neighbor says, I don't want this. And you say, but it's on my, if there is a gray area there, that then becomes quite a difficult one to resolve. Because as I understand it, if a tree or any plant transgresses and leans over, a neighbor can cut anything on their side of the fence, clear it, which is fine, but not on your side of the fence, for argument's sake. Now, if the fence becomes in dispute and you discover, oh dear, that tree actually may not be on, and there is the rub, because, what do you do then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever come across a scenario like that, but I'd imagine that if you've fenced in a tree and you've gone and in the process nicked some of your neighbor's property and run your fence in his property, he's within his rights to insist that it go on the boundary, and I suppose you'd have to get rid of the tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if you've fenced in a municipal piece of pavement that happens to contain a tree.
I know. Like sometimes it just seems like storms in a teacup, you know, where you go, well, you know, there's been an encroachment. It's been like that for quite a while now. You know, what is the point of upsetting the apple cart? It's never bothered anybody. You don't really go and use your property right onto the margin ever. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not like as if you're going to be seriously constrained in your use and enjoyment of the property, or, you know, you can't build onto the boundary anyway.
Well, the problem comes in where you've used the view as a selling point. And a sea view is worth a lot more than a non-sea view. Now, if you've got an errant piece of shrubbery
that's blocking the sea view,
it's costing a lot of money. You want, and then you discover
we did go through a whole lot of or several decisions that were made by the High Court years ago that you don't have a right to a view in that sense. You know, you've got a right to use and occupy your property, and nobody can interfere with that. But the view is not yours. He didn't buy it. So it might enhance the value of your property, but you don't own the view per se. For example, if the property in front of you is zoned to three stories, the people are quite entitled to build to three stories without accommodating you or paying you for your loss of the view. So that was established some time ago.
But it's an interesting one because I'm aware of the fact that in Ballito originally, almost every house had a sea view. I'm talking about, you know, Ballito, Salt Rock, you know, Sheffield, because of the topography of the land. And as the jungle has grown, so
the people in the Mshlanga feel the same way.
Everyone feels the same way. Which is why I think it's an area that is worthy of some investigation, because clearly if there is a boundary dispute over a foliage, and you discover, in fact, there is a legal remedy to this. In fact, I believe I own that little piece of property because the fence isn't correctly.
I mean,
it's worth a shot.
You must also remember that initially, when all of these homes went up, there wasn't really much going on here in terms of, and a lot of liberties were taken. You know, dwellings were built without plans. Yeah. I wanted to
ask you something that came up the other day. I was chatting to we have a plumbing show regularly, and it's interesting to note that there are statutes, laws that say, for example, a water closet, a water system, a water heating system, a geyser, has to be installed in a certain way to prevent dangerous events from occurring. And one thing that can't happen is for a geyser to be built into an exposed situation in a kitchen or something like that, we talk about that very high rise building in Ballito that called La Ballito, which went up kind of, you know, irregularly initially, and there it is, and it's a building, it stands. Every single apparently geyser in that building is illegal, technically illegal, because it's the way it was built. And the act maybe has changed. I'm not sure, but it definitely, according to our plumbing expert, every one of those geezers is illegal. Yeah. What do you do about that?
What did the author say? The past is a strange country. They do things differently there. it's something we live with now. You know, is the fact that a lot of things were ignored at the time when all these buildings and when the boom happened.
But
I must say it's much better managed now. I think you know, it seems that one of the over functioning departments in KDM is probably the building control guys. They're pretty strict.
Yeah. Now, I'm just thinking, if for example you want to buy or sell a property in that particular, and let's use it as an example, and there is no recourse to remedy because it is, it's built, it is built.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we try and do with all agreements of sale, when you're selling something that's 20, 30 years old, you do have to sell it foot stewards, because a 20, 30-year-old building doesn't come without problems. And the person is paying for a 20, 30-year-old building. He's not paying for a brand-new building, in which case he'd probably be paying a totally different price. And so we do contract on the basis that, well, this is sold to your foot stewards. It's not a new building. You know, there's going to be some window latches that aren't good, or the you know, some cupboards that that have been, you know, that aren't what they as good as new cupboards and so forth and so forth. And included in that will be, you know, I don't know. I bought it. I'm selling it. I never had the surveyors out. I don't know. You know, and you're buying it like that. If you're a buyer and you've got some misgivings about it, things don't appear right, or even if you're just somebody who's overly fastidious, or somebody who's serious about just making sure you don't get caught with a problem that, or inherit a problem. I don't mean get caught, but inherit a problem that initially should have been resolved years ago. You can go to all this trouble. You can say, well, you know, I do want to know where the beacons are. I want to see that there are plans for this building, that they have been approved by the municipality, and that they reflect what's actually there. And you can also ask for an occupation certificate. Now, there was a stage in this town where nobody got occupation certificates, so there will be a whole lot of homes without them. So these are all things you as the buyer can do if you want to be astute and you want to make sure that you're not...
Can you brief your do you have any kind of recourse to transferring attorneys to
you can go to a conveyancer like myself and say, listen, you know, I need to just have a look at the title deed. I want to see if there's any funny servitudes I don't know about, or, you know, any restrictions I don't know about. You can go to the municipality and ask them for the zoning certificate for the property and see what it's zoned for. And you can ask a surveyor to show you where the pegs are. You know, it's a couple of thousand rand. It might be worth your while.
Could be very costly.
If, for example, between 20,000 and 30,000 rand per servitude, if you end up with a property that needs three or four servitudes registered to make it regular,
you've got quite a bill.
I think if you're into one of the older properties, I think you'd want to be a bit more careful. You know, anything that's sort of 10 or less years old in this town should be regular, and especially if it's in an estate, because they were quite, you know, they've got their own building control within the estate.
Yeah.
So, you can probably be more confident that everything will be regular in a fairly newly built property. But, the old, you know, 20, 30, 40-year-old properties, it's very unlikely that they're compliant with... You know, or even that all the boundaries haven't shifted over time.
It's a fascinating area when you get into it.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, most of these things get resolved. I think the big trick is just to understand that there is a problem when you buy it, and then to address it like that. You know, you can say to the seller, "Look, you know, obviously there's a problem here. I don't want to inherit the problem, so I'd like it resolved before transfer."
Or possibly it would be a reason for some kind of price.
You could take it on yourself and get some quotes and say, well, it's going to cost me 40, 50 grand to sort this out, so I'd like to reduce the price accordingly. But please do that before you sign the agreement, because once you've agreed on the price, you've agreed on the price, and that's just that.
So you can't go back and...
There's one thing I really don't enjoy is somebody who's purchased something and wants to negotiate the price afterward. Because that's not fair.
Even if they discover that they are...
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, if it's sold foot stewards, it's sold foot stewards. And the only way that you can really get around a foot stewards clause, because it's still valid in our law, is if you can show that the seller knew about this fault, this defect, and that he concealed it from you.
Ah.
So you've got an actual act of concealment that you need to prove, and that's not always easy. You know, we've had cases where you can easily prove concealment. For example, there's serious damp, and the chap, just before going onto the market, sanded down the walls and painted them. And, 6 months later, the damp's back. Because what has he done? He's concealed a defect. There's a damp issue in the property. He's made it a latent defect because it's not visible on inspection, because he's just gone and painted over it. But it is going to reappear, in which case you can say, yes, the seller was aware of it. He concealed it with the intent to get you to buy a defective property.
Wow.
And then you can call on him. And, you know, damp is one of those issues in Ballito that's fairly prevalent, and it's a bugger to resolve, and it's expensive to resolve. So, you know, if you are going to buy any property, and you should have a good look. You should open the cupboards And make sure that you're not buying something with a damp issue, because you can chase water around a building for years and not resolve it.
So. And generally, a good idea or a good tip is if you go into the building when it's been closed up for a while, you'll get an idea that there's damp.
The slight odor, yeah. But you know, we all go into these. It's a happy time buying a property, and you're excited, and you've got romantic ideas about how you're going to end up living there, and how perfect it is for your purposes, and you're in a different mindset to somebody who's critically examining a building. And so quite often people get somebody in to have a look. That's often worth the expense if you discover something that's serious. Alternatively, you yourself should just take the old rose-tinted glasses off for a moment and have a good little sniff around and have a good dig around and open cupboards and see where you can normally tell, you know, if there's a lot of soil up against the building or something like that, that there's a potential for a problem there. And check out for damp, especially, is a problem and very hard to resolve and very expensive to resolve. So these are just things that as a buyer, because when you buy something footstoots, which is almost every property that you're going to buy that's not newly constructed by a developer, you're going to agree to buy it as it is, okay? If you couldn't be bothered to inspect what you're buying as it is, then you're just deemed to have bought it like that. And so once you buy something footstoots, you've got an extra duty to go and see what you bought, because you've just agreed to buy it with its defects. So you better understand what defects you've just purchased.
Like everything, in the terms of the old Latin expression, caveat emptor.
Caveat emptor.
Buyer beware. So there it is, and a very interesting conversation yet again with Gavin Steinhobel. If you have a property matter to discuss with an expert that has your interest at heart, well, we'll have once you engage him. Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law from Kloppers Inc. in the Bolito Village. Thanks so much for joining me in the morning show.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll
beautiful
chat
day,
again.
As
this
I
will
said.
Be up as a podcast shortly, so you can share it. But we'll be in conversation with Gavin again in a week's time on the morning show.